What is a lighthouse? It is a tower with a bright light at the top, located at an important or dangerous place. The main purpose of a lighthouse is to serve as a navigational aid and to warn of dangerous areas. Welcome to the EMS Lighthouse Project podcast. Illuminating the darkness of current EMS clinical practice with the bright light of science. Here are your hosts, Dr. Jeff Jarvis and Mike Verkest.
Hey everybody, Mike Verkest, Dr. Jeff Jarvis. We are back at it once again, my brother. How are you doing tonight?
Mike, I am doing great, my friend. It is so good to see your face and hear your voice again.
Well, thank you.
You know, I mean, we were just together in Oregon just a week or so ago, but somehow that didn't quite feel, I don't know, it felt sort of virtual-ish.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around, buddy. A lot. So we did Oregon EMS Conference, NAEMSP together. We did Texas EMS, and that Texas EMS Conference is coming up, right?
It's kind of weird. Yeah, we did it. It was a great conference that you'll see next week. Yeah, you hosted a panel discussion. Let's see, it was me and Dr. Heidi Abraham and yep. Dr. J.R. Pickett.
Yep.
It was, you had a rough gig trying to hold us together, but you did an admirable job, even as an honorary Texan.
Yeah, it was quite the shoes to fill, you know, Ginger, for those of you that attended Texas EMS conference last year, Ginger sort of did this. This was part two of that same sort of spiel, medical directors gone wild or some version of that type, medical directors.
No, that was it. Medical directors gone wild.
Anyway, it was good. And you just had a birthday.
I did. Let's see. What is today? The 19th? A couple days ago. Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, happy birthday from everybody at Flyber Jet.
Well, thank you very much. I'm another year older, getting a little slower to get out of bed.
Oh, God.
Run's going a little slower, but hey, I'm here. I got great friends. I got a cool gig like this. We get to talk research our friends on the interwebs.
I know. It's great to see everybody, all 40 or 50. Andy McCoy says, Ritu got a haircut and picked up a Texas drawl.
And he got much more handsome, I must tell you.
Oh my God.
He seems so a whole good. Lot smarter too. As you know.
There was a tweet the other day, by the way, that so Ritu has got he uses the virtual backgrounds when we do the Zoomeries, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And he put the whatever that Four Seasons landscaping background behind him. Anyway, so I sent out a tweet with a screenshot that said he's ready for his press conference, and the topic is his haircut in a mullet or not? And the polls are saying yes. And anyway, it was quite funny, and I got a kick out of it. So
I actually haven't seen his new haircut. He finally...
it's not a haircut. Oh. He's not got his haircut.
I see what that gig is. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going with the He's not going to a super spreader location.
Well, that is probably just as well. Good for him.
Yeah.
See, I can cut my hair with a razor.
I'm sorry. What?
Just zzz, and you know, I'm done.
Yeah, that's what I would do. That's what I do.
I was going to say. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, I see Tyler, our buddy Tyler's on. Hey, brother. Oh, shoot. Sorry. Camera's messed up. Rocking that foam frat polo, sir. Thank you very much, foam frat, for the little care package I got.
It's looking good. Looking good. I'm doing the well.
Oh, so yeah. See the other side. There you go.
The camera's backwards.
The camera thing. Oh my God. It's so annoying. Anyway, how's everyone doing out there tonight? We hope that you're having a great day. It's been a long week for both Dr. Jarvis and I, and probably most of you watching. The weeks are getting longer. The days are getting longer. We hope you're staying safe out there with all the COVID crap that's going on. I don't know about what's happening in your neck of the woods out there. I know Dr. Jarvis, Texas, we're all struggling, but we set a new record of daily cases today, which for Oregon is a lot. 1,225 today was our number, which is when we were high, we were like 200 in the state.
Wow.
And now we're at 1225. We're talking about alternate destinations now. We're talking about implementing Protocol 36 and implementing changes to response to keep the hospitals, because the hospitals are getting close.
Starting to hurt. Yep.
Yeah.
So Williamson County, where I am, is, we're just suburban Austin. We're doing okay. I'm definitely seeing an increase in the patients I'm seeing in the emergency department.
Yeah.
And we're seeing picks up in cases, but our hospitals are still doing okay.
Oh, that's good.
Now, out west, El Paso is hurting really, really badly.
Yeah.
That's about 1,000 miles from where I am. You may have heard Texas is a big state.
It's a big state, yeah.
So it's going pretty, it's rough out there. So we have sent some folks out. Some of my friends have deployed out there, and then we've been taking patients from our folks in El Paso. So they're certainly in our thoughts. They're having a rough time out there.
Yeah,
and I was stalling just a little bit because I was trying to look up what our case rate is. We had 230 deaths today. And 12,293 new cases today.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that is a record or not. Yeah. I know we were at about 100 cases in Williamson County.
Yeah.
So it's rough.
Yeah, indeed it is. And I know people didn't tune in to hear about COVID, right? But that's kind of the thing that's going on right now. But I do want to say
what? They might have known I was here. So if you were to roll the dice, if you were playing drinking bingo and you really wanted to get drunk, what would you put your money on? Just topic wise.
COVID, ketamine, and airway management.
No drinks for you.
Oh, dang. Dang.
Number four, what would you, Mike, you know the topic.
I was trying to play along.
There you go.
We're going to cover a paper, and I just want to read the title real quick, just so people are there. So this is episode 37 of the EMS Lighthouse Project podcast, and this is a randomized double-blind trial of IM droperidol, ziprasidone, and lorazepam for acute undifferentiated agitation in the emergency department.
That is it.
And there's some interesting tales about this, which... what I want to do is have you introduce what we're going to watch next.
We can do it. So we have been trying to, and I'll sort of explain this in a little bit, but basically I pre-recorded one of our podcasts just ready to go out on our YouTube channel and ready to go out in Apple Podcast as one of our regular podcasts. And then we decided we want to do a pre-recorded version and then throw in a live segment at the beginning and at the end. And during, while we're playing this recorded segment, we'll be able to interact with you, answer questions, and engage in tomfoolery in the chat. So I kind of like this format, and we're going to see what y'all think about it.
Yeah, exactly. So Dr. Jarvis, I'm going to get this video queued up. We're going to watch him discuss this paper, interact with us, like he said, in the comments. We're live. We're in there. We'll be answering your questions. And then after the video, we'll come back and do a little bit more of this. All right. Sound good to you?
Sounds good to me. Let's roll it.
Howdy, y'all. This is Dr. Jeff Jarvis. You may notice that this is not where I normally record from. So I am down here with my wife and my daughter and my dog, Chevy, in New Orleans. We came down for the baptism of my niece, Lily, and we got to share that with my sister, Lynn, and her husband, Mario. And it was really nice. We even wandered around New Orleans a little bit. I was a little bit shocked to see that many people without masks. So we decided to keep our time downtown to a minimum and beat feet and recorded here in the Airbnb where I am. All right. So I wanted to give you an update on the frequency of podcast. You may have noticed that it is taking us a little bit longer to get these out than I really wanted. I really wanted to be able to do this every 2 weeks. Well, what I found is recording an audio podcast alone, that's pretty straightforward and we can knock it out quickly. But we wanted to just bring it up a notch and we wanted to do video. And then I wanted to bring in guests and I wanted to do interviews and I wanted to do oral board presentations with residents. And I think those are wonderful things and I'm going to continue to try to do them. The problem is they increase the complexity logarithmically, and increased complexity means it takes longer to get out. There is a lot of great EMS research that is produced in the meantime. So I am going to default back to doing these types of sessions so I can get information out quicker. And then when I have time, I will edit out and produce larger episodes with special guests. All right, so let's get down to it. Obviously, we are here in New Orleans, and as they say, le bon temps roule. So yes, I'm drinking a nice New Orleans beer. This is a Giacomo Juicy IPA from Abita Brewing. It's not bad. I'm not generally a big juicy IPA fan, but, well, my wife is, and that explains why we have it. But it's not bad. Let's get to the topic at hand. So y'all have probably heard that I like me some droperidol. Now, I can't get droperidol, as we've discussed in the past. And if I can't get droperidol, at least I can talk about it. And it turns out there was a paper published just this year that talks about droperidol for acute agitation. So let's talk about that paper. So in way of background, we know a couple of things. We know that droperidol, the reason I can't get it is because the FDA decided they needed to put a black box warning on droperidol because it causes QT prolongation. Now, as it turns out, that was really the first of the big black box warnings. Nobody knew about these things. It came out, pharmacies, physicians, everybody just freaked out and said, we can't give it anymore. Now, since then, there has been a lot of additional evidence published that says droperidol is safe. To the extent that it does cause QT prolongation, it doesn't do it any more than any of the 50 million other drugs out there that cause QT prolongation, including the drug that came out immediately after droperidol was killed off under suspicious circumstances, ondansetron, Zofran. Give it like water, no problems. Turns out it causes QT prolongation at least to the same degree that droperidol does. Finally, I would like to point out, I feel compelled to point out, no one ever died from QT prolongation. QT prolongation in and of itself, not a problem. The problem is the malignant arrhythmias that arise from QT prolongation, notoriously Torsades. Well, droperidol doesn't seem to be associated with any increased odds of Torsades, which is why I think this whole black box warning thing is kind of bogus. And it also takes a wonderful drug out of our hot little hands to use to benefit our patients. All right, so let's talk acute agitation. There are some things we know about acute agitation. It's relatively common. It accounts for about 3% of all emergency department visits. Now, that's what's published. I haven't seen what is published for EMS, but I can't imagine it's any less. And I would suspect it's probably a little more. So we also know that when you're dealing with an acute, agitated, violent patient, we have to restrain them for their own benefit, for our benefit, for their benefit, for everybody involved. And physical restraint alone is rarely sufficient. It is also inhumane. And I might add, it is also dangerous because some of the restraints that we put people in to control their behavior actually restricts their ability to breathe. And these patients who are highly agitated, they are ramped up, they're tachycardic, they're hypertensive. Restricting their ability to breathe can put them into a very dangerous metabolic acidosis that could actually cause death. That is called positional asphyxia, and we really worry about that. As a matter of fact, a lot of the in-custody deaths from these violent patients we are worried are from positional asphyxia and could be safely treated with medication. Now, the medication that we are commonly using now is ketamine, but at least in my system, the reason we're using ketamine is we can't get droperidol. Now, I love me some ketamine, but the more and more experience we get using high doses, meaning 4 milligrams per kilogram or even 5 milligrams per kilogram IM of ketamine, is not without adverse events. It's not without risks. Now, overall, it's a relatively safe drug, but as with any drug, there are some risks to it, and we are seeing some respiratory depression, some laryngospasm, and even some need to intubate patients. And I'm not just talking about that one patient where that one doctor seemed to intubate all of their patients. This does seem to be overall a safe drug, but there does seem to be an increase in the need of airway protection. All right, now, having said that, let's get back to what this paper is actually about, and that is droperidol. Here is the paper we're going to talk about. This is a randomized double-blind trial of intramuscular droperidol, ziprasidone, and lorazepam for acute undifferentiated agitation in the emergency department. And the lead author on this paper is Mark Martell, and the senior author looks like John Cole. This is out of Hennepin County Medical Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The folks at Hennepin have been doing some amazing research when it comes to agitation, not just with droperidol, but they've also done work on ketamine. Now, this particular paper is not really a new paper, and that's not really true. The paper itself is new. It was just published, but it was published on research that was done between 2004 and 2005. Now, as the one big question is, well, why are they just publishing it now? And that's a very legitimate question. And they actually answer that in the paper. My heart is warmed by the honesty of their answer. They basically say the three main authors got distracted, had other academic priorities, put out the abstract, and then just sort of got distracted and it never happened. That is honest. I like that. Shouldn't happen, but it is honest, and it certainly happened with me. A lot of my projects have ended at the abstract phase. Now, one of the things that they say in the discussion is that they felt they needed to come back now and publish it because there had been some changes to the EFIC, or exception from informed consent, the IRB requirements to do this type of research without informed consent that made doing these types of randomized control trials more difficult. And as a result, there hasn't been a whole lot of randomized control trials, good evidence on this subject, what to do for agitated patients. And they also point out that droperidol is back, at least in places like Oregon and Denver and apparently Hennepin County, because it ain't back in Georgetown, Texas. I can tell you that. And I am, well, I'm just going to skip how I feel about that. It just hurts me. I believe that it was like personally, I feel like attacked. Not so good. But they said that they needed to go ahead and publish it now. And then finally, they mentioned that they have an ethical obligation to publish this data because patients enrolled in the trial with the understanding that their risk could benefit patients in the future. So as a result, they're publishing it now, and I am glad they did. So let's talk a little bit about the paper itself. This is a follow-up study to one that was published that compared droperidol 5 milligrams to ziprasidone 20 milligrams to Versed or midazolam 5 milligrams. And in that paper, they found that there wasn't a whole lot of difference. Droperidol and midazolam had equal rates of sedation, but midazolam needed to be redosed faster, and those patients getting midazolam needed additional sedation. So overall, in their primary outcome, there was no difference between droperidol and midazolam. Either one were much better than 20 of ziprasidone, but there were some advantages to droperidol. And then they did notice that at 20 milligrams, there was some prolonged sedation. And they said, well, I wonder what it would be like at 10 milligrams. With this trial, they are looking at 5 milligrams of droperidol, and these are all IM doses, compared to 10 milligrams of ziprasidone, compared to 20 milligrams of ziprasidone, compared to 2 milligrams of lorazepam. Now, they explained the reason for these changes compared to the parent trial, and they said they're happy with their droperidol, but the initial 20 milligram dose of ziprasidone, as we mentioned, had some adverse events. So they're wondering if perhaps it was a dose effect relationship. So they wanted to look at 10 versus 20. And then with midazolam, they noted that it was rapid on and worked just as well as droperidol, but it had to be dosed more often. And that's just something to do with the pharmacokinetics of midazolam. It has a more rapid onset, but it also has a shorter half-life. So they wanted to use lorazepam, which has a longer half-life. So those were the four arms. This was a double-blinded study. The pharmacist would prepare the drugs in a blinded solution. Nobody knew what drug they were giving. It was just a little number. And they were comparing those four arms. Now, the population they were studying were adult patients 18 or over with undifferentiated agitation, and they excluded the usual suspects, the Ps, pregnant, prisoners, pediatric patients, and they also excluded those patients with allergies. Their outcome was the proportion of patients with adequate sedation at 15 minutes. And I like that outcome. That's a very reasonable outcome. And it's dichotomous, meaning you either got it or you didn't. So we see a percentage of patients who met the main objective. They were adequately sedated. That's what I care about. I don't care so much about a specific score. All right, so how did they define adequately sedated? They used an AMSS score, and that is a score that goes from -4, which is in a coma, to 0, which is normal, like me, although I've had a lot of coffee today, so maybe I'm more around a 1, all the way up to a +4, which is violently agitated. And they describe adequate sedation as an AMSS score of 0 or below. Again, that's a reasonable definition. They also looked at some additional outcomes. They looked at length of stay in the emergency department. They looked for need for rescue sedation. And they looked at how long the patient was sedated. How long could they go before they started assessing the patient? All right, so what did they find? Overall, pretty evenly matched group of patients, as you would expect from a randomized control trial. There were between 25 and 30 patients in each arm. The median age across the board was 40, and not surprisingly, 76% of all of these patients were male. And the reason I say not surprising is because overall, if you were to guess, I'm seeing a pissed off patient who is highly agitated, it's probably going to be a man. Just happens that way. Now, between 74 and 94% of all patients had a discharge diagnosis. Once tests were back and once we had time to calm things down and get a good understanding of what the diagnosis is, most of these patients were from alcohol. Let's talk about, bottom line, what worked best. And again, we're talking here about the primary outcome, proportion of patients with adequate sedation at 15 minutes. What we found, droperidol, 64% of patients with adequate sedation. The next highest was ziprasidone 20, and that was at 35%. Then Ativan 2, which was 29%, followed by ziprasidone 10 at 25%. So droperidol didn't just do a lot little better, it did a lot better. Now, the only other outcome that made that was significantly different between groups was respiratory depression.
So in terms of adverse events, the only significant one was respiratory depression. Now, respiratory depression was measured as either hypoxia or an increase in end-tidal CO2, and that was highest with Ativan. It was at 48% with Ativan, 39% with ziprasidone 20, 36% with ziprasidone 10, and only 12% with droperidol. Now, again, that was respiratory depression, the combined outcome. If you look at a change in end-tidal CO2, actually, let's not even look at that because I don't think we really care about specifically a change in end-tidal CO2 as anything other than a surrogate measure. Let's look at what we do care about, which is hypoxia measured as an SpO2 less than 90. It was, again, highest with lorazepam, and that was at 23%. It was 19% with 20 milligrams of ziprasidone, then 8% with droperidol, and 7% with 10 of ziprasidone. So overall, the adverse events were highest in lorazepam, then 20 of ziprasidone, and then 10 of ziprasidone. Overall, again, what this is telling us is droperidol is safe, and in fact, it is safer than some of our alternatives, particularly benzos, which is what everybody is pushing us towards.
And when it came to all of the other outcomes, there was no difference. So that's good. And that means no additional rescue sedation, no longer ED stays. All right, y'all, let's wrap it up. What is my bottom line on this paper? It tells us that droperidol is safe and it is effective for sedation of these acutely undifferentiated patients, the patients that we see. They saw no more QT prolongation with droperidol than the benzo or the ziprasidone. They also saw more rapid control with droperidol. There was a higher proportion of patients, almost twice, actually more than twice as much, 64% compared to 35, so almost twice as much. Adequate sedation at 15 minutes with droperidol. That's a big deal. That's what we're looking for. So I think the droperidol here is the real deal. Now, I thought that before, that's my bias, but I think this paper really helps us show that. They also found that there was a trend toward less profound sedation with droperidol. In other words, the patients were calm, but they weren't obtunded. And the receiving, either the receiving physician, if this were an EMS trial, or the consultants, i.e. psychiatry, could assess these patients a little quicker with droperidol than the other medication. And that's a big deal. I would suspect when you have sedated a patient with ketamine, when you give them 4 per kilo or 5 per kilo of IM ketamine, you're not going for sedation. You're going for a state of general anesthesia, something that we really need to recognize to use that drug safely. It is safe for the patient when used by people who know what they're doing, but you can't assess them until they start to wake up. And I suspect if you have given this drug, you might have, just might have met some resistance when you get to the emergency department because the doc says he couldn't assess them. Droperidol, I think, would work better there. All right. What am I going to do with this information? Well, right now, not a damn thing, because I can't get the frickin' droperidol. Okay, just gonna calm down. If I can get droperidol, in the happy, happy day, January 1, 2021, when this evil 2020 is behind us, we're going to celebrate with droperidol available for everyone. I can feel it in my bones. Boundary is going to say, hey, Jeff, Merry Christmas. Here's some droperidol. I'm looking forward to that. When that day happens, I am putting droperidol back on the truck, and I'm going to hold off on using ketamine for only those special circumstances where droperidol is not appropriate. And that will likely be with online medical control. For run-of-the-mill, 99.9% of our acute agitation, we're going to use droperidol. Love it. Now, it turns out as soon as it hits the truck, we're also going to use droperidol for our atraumatic headaches. Amazing for that. And we're also going to use it for our nausea that Zofran is not impressing. Droperidol is truly a wonder drug. Now, I keep saying undifferentiated agitation because we don't see diagnosed patients. We see them in their undiagnosed state. Are there some patients where I would go with benzos for sedation first? Yes. Yes, there are. Which ones? Well, first off, they're not about to kick my butt. If that's the case, I don't care what the cause is. They're either going to get droperidol or ketamine because they're a danger to themselves and they're a danger to me. They're a danger to our crews. So that's not when we're going to use benzos. Will benzos in that setting work? Yes, but you have to titrate it. And by the time you get to the amount of benzo that'll work, now you have to deal with way more respiratory depression. So not actively violent, but maybe a little agitated. If they are withdrawing from alcohol, benzos are the antidote. Benzos, 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 and more benzos. Perfect for that. Patients with stimulant overdose, methamphetamine, cocaine, benzos are great for that. Again, if they are not so agitated that they're posing a threat to themselves or other people. All right, guys, that is the latest paper. That's what I got for you. Very excited, cool paper. I'm looking forward to more evidence of droperidol, but what I'm really looking forward to is getting to use it again. For those of you lucky bastards out there who can use it, I envy you, and I would absolutely get it back on your truck. It is an amazing drug. All right, y'all, that's all I got for you. From New Orleans, I say again, le bon temps roule, let the good times roll. Enjoy yourselves. I hope you're enjoying this podcast. If you like this, please give us a good rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. Tell your friends, help them find this, and help get the word out about EMS literature. I think we all do better when we understand the whys of what we're doing. Thanks a lot, y'all. Take care.
All right, back at it. Nice job, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry about the little mic faux pas there. It turns out it works better if you know what you're doing with it. That was the first thing I recorded. So kind of learning as we go.
It was fine. It was fine. Could it have been a little bit better to meet your standards of high expectations and high standards? Yes, of course, but it was great.
It also would have been easier if I had. So the reason I had to cut in is I said something stupid. That's what I love about doing the pre-recorded thing and then the live is that when I say stupid shit, I can go back in and go,
exactly.
What I meant to say was.
Right, exactly. Hey, we've had a couple people ask if there's any way that you could post a link to where that study's at in the comment.
Absolutely. I will definitely do that. And not that I would ever violate copyright or, you know, anything like that. But if a little request happened to pop up in my inbox, PDF might be in a reply.
So we'll get it in there at some point. But let's keep going with this little thing here. I just have a couple comments. First one was, I thought your explanation of why are we publishing a paper 16 years after we did the actual study was phenomenal. And it's something we've talked about before many times on here. And that's sort of the responsibility of the people who perform research on human beings, the people that are giving consent with the greater, bigger, you know, humanity, excuse me, if you will, in mind, that there's really an obligation to do that.
Absolutely, Mikey. So there's a compact we make when we do research, when someone enrolls in a randomized control trial, not knowing what benefit they're going to get and not entirely being sure about what risk they're undertaking.
Yeah.
In some cases, they do that even knowing that there is no potential benefit for them. They know that if they get the placebo, there's no potential benefit, but they do it anyway.
Right.
And the reason they do it is because there may be what we learn from this may benefit future patients, and they're doing it for those future patients. So as researchers, we have an ethical obligation to translate that knowledge, or at least broadcast that knowledge. And if it turns out the knowledge is helpful, to translate it into practice. So that's part of the ethical compact that researchers have. It's part of the whole reason we have institutional review boards and IRBs, is to make sure that the risks the patients are taking when they enroll in trials are minimal, that we have done everything we can to minimize them even more.
Yeah.
But then that the patients, that we're living up to our end of the bargain. And that's the reason they did it.
Yeah.
And I applaud them, even if it was late in the game.
Yeah, for sure. And sort of wanted to correct you. We can't get it reliably here yet in Oregon. So I think we have one agency that can sort of get it, but there's no widespread availability, at least in our area as of yet. So I'm looking forward to it.
So, Mikey, what you're saying is that Ritu might be full of it, and he's just really trolling me when he said. No,
because the one agency that can get it is his agency. So,
I thought you were his agency.
Yeah, he's not full of it. Lots of great stuff in the comments. It looks like Nick Adams probably found that a link to that study. So he threw that in the comments.
Oh, good. Thank you, because I just found it and was in the process of copying it. So you beat me to it.
Yep.
Thank you, Nick.
I think Nick got that in there as well. A couple other things that, you know, I threw a comment in there when we were talking about, sort of what do they call it? The AMSS. Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Well, and I threw a comment in there wondering if people are using scales like the Brossette Violence Assessment Score or the Richmond Agitation Sedation Scale.
Yep.
When they're doing that. And I will tell you, I wanted to just talk a little bit about this from our perspective. So, you know, there's tons of information going out that we're seeing news story after news story about people that are being chemically restrained or pharmacologically sedated. And in our system, we felt it was important that we have some kind of a validated scale to sort of guide decision making when it comes to pharmacological sedation. So the first thing that we do, the way our protocols are laid out, I'm just going to throw this out there for people because I think it's pretty interesting, is we want to know kind of what their level of
pissed offness
is. Yeah, exactly. I'm struggling to find my words. I was doing this last night. I was teaching about stroke, funnily enough, or humorously enough, and I couldn't. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't find my words. But anyway, so we use the Brossette Violence Assessment Checklist. And that is basically six things that is a 1-point scale each. So confusion, irritability, boisterousness, verbal threats, physical threats, and attacks on objects. Okay, so that's the Brossette. So if you are 0, obviously you're a low risk for violence. If you're a 1 to 2, it's moderate. If you are a 3 or higher, then you're at a high risk of violence. So what we've done in our protocols is we have said that we have guided our medication administration and choice based on their Brossette score. Okay. So if they are a 3 or more, they get this track. If they are a 1 to 3, then they get this track, right? I mean, these are just guidelines for people. And then what that does is when this is in that chart, it gives us an objective thing to look at. Hey, when we got there, they were punching the walls. They had just girlfriend reports that he was choking her. He's calm right now, but he was extremely pissed off that this scale was through the roof. So we decided to give him some pharmacological sedation. Then what we will do is use the RAS, the Richmond Agitation Sedation Scale, which looks a lot like that AMSS that we were looking at on the screen, by the way. And that's a +4 down to a -5. And that's basically how are they now? So if a +3 was very agitated and we give our sedation, it's almost like a pain scale. Where are they now that we've given that? So the idea is that we want to get them to sort of maybe a light sedation so we can document that they're a -2 or something like that. And what it does is I just really feel like it really ties up nicely with a nice little bow on it. Anytime we have to do this, because these can be highly scrutinized calls. And I think anything we can do to sort of bolster our documentation is probably a good idea.
I agree with you completely. The things, if you look at that position statement from the Colorado State Society of Anesthesiologists right. that pisses me off so much. Yeah. Or if you look at the issues there, a lot of those issues are going on the assumption that EMS is giving this drug willy-nilly without any assessment, without any ability to exactly. monitor the patients or control the airways, and at the behest of law enforcement. None of that shit is true. Literally nothing they said is true.
Yeah.
Other than the need to use the drug safely and appropriately, which is absolutely true. We use the RAS score. We kind of use that for both purposes. We said basically only give ketamine at a positive 4. If they're anything between a 0 and a positive 4, think about something else. And we do have other options. We have Versed and we have Haldol. And this is absolutely where I would put droperidol if we could get it. And once, if you do have to give ketamine, once you've given ketamine, you have to document the RAS score before and after. And the only time, basically our goal is 0. That's where we want them. And 0 is alert and calm. And that's our goal.
Yeah.
Giving 4 or 5 per kilo of ketamine IM is not going to get you to alert and calm. Right. You're going to hit 0 on your way to -5. But when you're violent and out of control, -5 is where I want you.
Yeah.
We'll get control of you. And then as you start to wake up, our hope is you're metabolizing whatever it is underneath that. And we can give you additional sedation with Haldol or benzo, something now that we have a little bit more time and you're better controlled. So I think something like this is incredibly important to document that you are doing ongoing monitoring. And I agree that the RAS score and the AMSS look awfully similar to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, another little thing that we added in our system, and I don't know if we've actually talked about this or not before, you and I anyway, is that we added ODT Zyprexa 2 years ago for the people that maybe they're a +1 or +2. They don't need Haldol. They don't need, but maybe they need something a little bit to take the edge off. And we've actually seen some pretty good results with a little ODT. Most people are willing to take it. There's a great sort of psychological effect that they're getting something, right, to make them
feel better. You could probably give them ODT Zofran and get a decent.
Well, I'm not going to say that hasn't happened on accident. Just saying. Zyprexa, olanzapine versus ondansetron comes in the exact same package. Looks exactly the same.
There are probably worse medical errors to make. Not that we would, you know, condone and not get to the root cause of any of them.
I'm wondering if we had a lot of nauseated people that suddenly felt better about things in the world. That's my guess. But anyway, we ended up putting a little smiley face sticker on the back of the Zyprexa just to differentiate that. But anyway, there's lots of little things you can do, right, that don't necessarily include 20 milligrams of Geodon.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 300 milligrams of ketamine.
Yep.
Yeah.
And interestingly, as this paper showed, 20 of ziprasidone still doesn't work as well as droperidol. Right. Droperidol really is a wonderful, wonderful drug. I see that Nick asked about whether droperidol has a role for pain control, both trauma and I'm assuming he means medical abdominal pain here. So I've never had a protocol for that. I've never personally used it like when I'm in the room.
Yeah.
But I have had some bizarre situations, just not run of the mill, where a crew called me. We ended up for a variety of reasons doing a very, very long distance transfer, like 8 hours. And we just flat ran out of fentanyl. And they called me and I said, well, let's wing this bad boy. Give her droperidol. Worked like a champ. She's awake, but she is, I mean, no more pain. There may have been pain, but she was very, very comfortable. A little drowsy, and that was it. So I don't have any experience other than that N of one, but it does work well there. I've heard anecdotally that people use it for pain. It probably wouldn't be my go-to analgesic, though.
I think we got lots of other stuff that's sort of tried and true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, anything else from your end before we jump on out of here tonight?
So I made the case in the video, and the paper really made the case. I was just describing it about why droperidol is a great drug for agitation. But let me just remind you of the other things that it is good for. Amazing antiemetic. I think it is much better than Zofran. It does cause a little bit more sedation than Zofran. Zofran, it causes some, and Zofran really doesn't. But I think it's pretty good. When you have people actively vomiting, sometimes Zofran just doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't really cut it. Droperidol cuts it.
And that's a pretty standard dose, like a 0.25.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So you can do anywhere from 0.625 to 1.25.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other thing that it's really good for is migraines, headaches. When we had it in our protocols back when we could get it, we would give 2.5 of droperidol for migraines. By the time I did it on an ambulance once, gave it, by the time we got to the hospital, I knew the ER doc that I was turning the patient over to, and he says, Jeff, you know, the medic is given a report, as a student medic was given the report to the nurse, and he said, hey Jeff, what you got? It's a migraine, all better. He's like, seriously, what'd you do? Droperidol. Can I discharge them? Absolutely. And home dude was gone before he was feeling great.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, if you hadn't gotten me this far from home, I want to go home now.
Yeah.
It's an amazing drug. So that's my argument for why droperidol is wonderful.
I love it. Well, we're going to investigate this a little more, at least in my area, because we want it. We want it.
Yeah.
We had it in our protocols for 20 years. We finally went 6 years without ever being able to get it. We literally pulled it out of our protocols. And then this year, with all the hot rumors, we put it back in.
So, Mikey, I saw a comment here about a saying for droperidol.
Oh, my God. I saw that, too.
Exactly. So you had one, didn't you? What did y'all say?
Oh, yeah. We did have one. It's sort of stupid, but with a nap scene. We used to call it, we were going to slap a nap on somebody. Because it was a nap scene, and they were going to go to sleep. Slap a nap. So that's what we did. And I'm telling you, before we knew what excited delirium was, we had one before it was chic, and we were in the middle of a frigging 4-lane highway, naked crazy guy running around in the middle. We tackled him, slapped a nap on him, and we had a nice, easy, comfortable, safe transport to the hospital with him. It was beautiful.
Feeling a little awkward about the naked dude in your ambulance, but aside from that, doing all right.
All good.
So Jay-Z was asking about extra pyramidal effects with the whole class. So any of the dopaminergic drugs, the antipsychotics, can cause extra pyramidal effects. The atypical ones, the newer ones, like ziprasidone, have less of those. The typical ones like haloperidol and droperidol have more. But in my experience with droperidol, it is definitely less than haloperidol.
Yeah. And if you've never seen somebody have that, but you've heard of what that looks like, you will know it when you see it. Like, you will just know it. Like, I will never forget the first time I saw that, somebody with that extra pyramidal. Oh, my God. She was literally licking her shoulder. And she was alert. And did not understand what in the hell she was doing, but she was doing it. And I said, oh my God, I know what that is. And they gave her some Benadryl and she was shaped up.
It's intensely uncomfortable too.
Yeah. It was not funny. But I knew exactly what I was looking at when I saw it. And
The first time I saw it was in the old Bentob Hospital. Bentob is the big county trauma center in Houston. I was a paramedic student there. And the nurse, this is when, you know, you would stack, instead of stacking people up in hallway beds, they just stack them up in hallway chairs, you know, sort of prop them up into the unconscious dude next to you. And there was this entire wall of people, you know, with this, you know, not trismus. I'm trying to remember what the name of it is, where you have this intense muscle spasm, which is part of the EPS.
Oh.
And she said somebody out there thought it would be a great idea to sell Haldol as an illicit drug. So people were taking a bunch and they overdosed on it. And she said, here, grab a bunch of Benadryl and just give it to that wall.
Like a Pez dispenser.
Yep. Give it to them.
crazy.
I'm like, I now know what that stuff is.
Yeah.
I know what it does.
Well, before I get us out of here, I want to make a special announcement.
I like it. An announcement, maybe something new, something exciting.
Yes. So come back right here, wherever you're watching this, Sunday. We are going to be announcing and debuting a brand new Flight Bridgehead podcast, and you do not want to miss it. It is going to be phenomenal. We've got 5 episodes recorded already. It's like nothing you have heard, and it is going to be humongously popular.
So, exciting.
It's very cool. So we've got an event created on Facebook. We'll just come back to Facebook, Twitter, wherever it is you're watching from, YouTube, whatever. Here Sunday, same time, 6 o'clock. Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And just be ready for a badass new podcast. It's going to be awesome.
It is. I'm very excited about it. I have nothing whatsoever to do about it other than I'm going to be a very excited listener. Great talent. It's going to be awesome.
Yep. Well, so we're super excited about that. This is not a network like we're bringing somebody on. This is like a Flight Bridgehead in-house badass podcast, right? Yep. Not that there's anything wrong with being on the network. That's not what I meant. But like, this is, we love it so much. It's literally our podcast. So it's going
to
be good.
I do have to say that, you know, our podcast, Mikey, is about evidence-based medicine. There are other podcasts like that, not necessarily for EMS.
Right.
But I've never heard a podcast like the one that we're going to release. So there it's going to be exciting.
That's so good. Oh my God. I'm excited. So let's talk about podcasts for a second. For all of you that watching, we're assuming that you listen to the podcast, but if you don't, we would love for you to go subscribe. Now, Jeff mentioned a little bit in the video, but wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find the EMS Lighthouse Project, Second Shift, Flight Bridgehead, the new one when it comes out. So Spotify, Apple, Google, Alexa, you can listen to it on Amazon. Like, it is everywhere. So it'd be great if you could go to all those platforms and subscribe to these podcasts, give us a rating, give us some feedback, because that gets us up in the ratings, right? So more people can see it. So if you enjoy what we're putting out, we would really appreciate and sort of beg for you, go give us ratings and reviews. It makes a big difference in these platforms to get our name out there. So we'd really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We are not above groveling.
Yeah. Someone just asked what you're drinking.
Well, it turns out it is a Pappy. I have, this is my very first glass of Pappy ever. Eric Bauer is an amazing guy and sent me a bottle, and it is truly amazing. Almost as good as Eric is. So Eric, cheers, my friend. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Yeah, that's the
absolutely amazing.
That's a good little glass. What were your initial thoughts when you got it? It's like such a big deal.
I could not believe it. I'm like, oh my God, dude, this is amazing.
How does it taste?
It is good. You know, we were talking about that. My go-to is Maker's Mark, and it definitely is different than a normal whiskey. This is just so far beyond that. It is incredible. It gives smooth a bad name.
Yeah.
And you know, we were talking about the hints of it. I got sort of a maple taste. My wife sipped it. She got a chocolate caramel taste. Yeah, yeah. And you were saying sort of a vanilla.
Yeah, I was catching the vanilla maple. I mean, it's just really good.
Yeah. So good. And actually, I see Jay-Z. I sort of lied a little bit. We were at a steakhouse in Austin, and Jay-Z ordered a glass, and I had a sip of his.
You've had
it. Yes.
And it's the 15, right? Or the 18 or something? 15. Yeah.
15.
Looks like my boy's on here. Caleb. Hi, Caleb. Caleb is actually living with the Bowers right now down in Kentucky.
Outstanding.
Left the house, and he's doing he's in EMT class. This is his first week. He's got his third class tomorrow. Very exciting.
Awesome. Congratulations, man.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. Well, hey, we kept this damn thing right to about an hour. I can't tell you how impressed I am.
There is a first for everything, Mikey.
God. Let me get us out of here. On behalf of Dr. Jeff Jarvis, Mike Verkest, you've been watching and listening to the EMS Lighthouse Project podcast. We are definitely a proud member of the Flight Brigad podcast family, a Fire Dog production. All right. You guys have a great night. We'll talk to you later.
Take care, y'all.
See ya.
You've been listening to the EMS Lighthouse Project podcast, a proud member of the Flight Brigad podcast family and a Fire Dog production. Visit flightbridgehead.com for more information.